from 90.7 WFAE. This is Newsworthy for Friday, February 6th, 2026. I'm Eric Thiel. A Charlotte Town Hall event Thursday night ended early when attendees began chanting and shouting their opposition to the I-77 South Express Lane project. Hosted by Charlotte District 2 City Councilman Malcolm Graham, the event was to discuss rezoning efforts, crime statistics, economic growth, and the interstate project. WBTV reports that near the end of a presentation by NCDOT, a man stood up and started yelling in opposition to the plans. He was joined by dozens of others who also held up signs in opposition. Graham asked the crowd to stop and warned he would end the meeting if they did not. After more shouting, Graham ended the town hall and asked that the conference room at Friendship Missionary Baptist Church be cleared. Transportation officials said this week they plan to build elevated toll lanes through the uptown portion of the project. The North Carolina State Board of Education has approved its annual list of funding request priorities ahead of the General Assembly's short session in April. James Farrell reports on the more than $1 billion in requests.
Some general priorities don't have specific price tags. Those include a moratorium on the Opportunity Scholarship Program and making teacher salaries the highest in the Southeast. Jeff Coltrane of the Department of Public Instruction said North Carolina is currently ranked 8th of 12 Southeastern states and 10th when adjusting for cost of living.
So we've clearly fallen behind, and fallen behind some of our closest neighbors. South Carolina, Tennessee, and Alabama all have now average teacher pay that's higher than us.
Other proposals include $40 million to expand science of reading training to teachers in grades 6 through 8, and a nearly $200 million request to overhaul the funding formula for exceptional children's services. The board also voted to include a request for $150 million to replace aging devices for all students. Many of those proposals were on last year's list, too, but never passed the finish line in the General Assembly. James Farrell, WFAE News.
Governor Josh Stein signed an executive order Thursday directing state agencies to put more resources toward behavioral health and public safety programs and to consider possible reforms. As Adam Wagner reports, it follows several high-profile incidents, including last year's fatal stabbing on the Charlotte Blue Line involving a suspect said to have been suffering from mental illness.
Stein says he wants to work to fix gaps in the state's mental health programs that would, he says, protect both the people experiencing the illness and everyone else. Those steps would include exploring ways to expand insurance coverage of mental health care, standardizing delivery of a drug and mental health treatment program in state prisons, and including mental health providers in emergency response.
We are working in coordinated fashion to at maximum efficiency so that we can have the greatest impact, because what we don't want are the crises, the horrific events that happened last year.
Stein, a Democrat, acknowledged that accomplishing some goals would require working with the Republican-led General Assembly. Those include raising the pay of state prison and psychiatric hospital employees to try to address staffing shortfalls. Adam Wagner, North Carolina Newsroom, Capitol Bureau.
The city of Charlotte is considering new rules for street vendors. That includes requiring vendors to get permits and instituting criminal penalties for unpermitted vendors. At a city council committee meeting Thursday, Charlotte-Mecklenburg Police Captain Christian Wagner said officers can only issue citations to unpermitted vendors in two neighborhoods, Uptown and Noda, and it's not much of a deterrent.
We can only issue one citation a day, and we can't make the vendor leave.
He says vendors often don't pay the citations. City Council is planning a public feedback session on February 17th. The city is also considering relaxing rules on taxis, black cars, and limos, which it regulates, to help them compete with Uber and Lyft, which the city doesn't oversee. A council committee Thursday heard proposals like establishing a stand for black cars in Uptown, allowing cars up to 15 years old to be used, and allowing more fare flexibility. But Peak Limousine CEO Sean Glasgow said those changes won't be enough.
We can't compete. They're 90% of all the trips that happen in Charlotte, and you all have no control over it.
City staff voiced opposition against more radical changes, like allowing limos and taxis to charge flat fares, or doing away with the city's passenger vehicle for hire ordinance altogether. South Carolina lawmakers have passed a bill designed to give parents more control over their children's use of social media and restrict the kind of data social media companies can collect about young users. The bill would require companies to give parents the ability to restrict their children's access to social media late at night and during school. Companies would also have to scale back data collection and targeted advertising for minors. The bill now heads to the desk of Governor Henry McMaster. Charlotte saw two major winter storms in recent weeks, bringing snow and freezing temperatures. Those frigid conditions pushed local shelters beyond their normal capacity. Avismeni Esse reports.
Roof Above hosted 986 people during the storms. The group's free men's shelters typically host about 550 people. Roof Above Vice President Stephanie Wallace says the storms provided an opportunity.
Being able to engage people that haven't been in the shelter in a while and talk with them about next steps on housing.
50 cots were donated to the shelter and dining areas were turned into makeshift accommodations.
Seeing these numbers is going to help us talk to people in the community and engage them on what can we do as a county, as a city, and how can we build more options for people, because there is a need and, you know, people need somewhere to go. They deserve safe, affordable housing.
A county study found last year that at least 444 people were living outdoors. Elvis Meneyese, WFA News.
A Charlotte nonprofit is inviting the community to celebrate Afro-Latino traditions through music, dance, and history this weekend. Julian Berger has more.
Afro-Latino Fest is organized by La Casa de la Cultura, a local group for immigrant and Afro-descendant communities. The three-day festival includes live performances, drumming, dance workshops, and cultural panels focused on honoring Afro-Latinos in Charlotte. Co-founder Milagros Hugueto says the festival highlights shared traditions across the African diaspora, from Puerto Rico to Venezuela and beyond.
We decided to create a space in which people from this diaspora located in Charlotte, they had a space to not only talk about their experience as Afro-Latinos, but their traditions.
The festival kicks off Friday at 6:30 p.m. at the VAPA Center in Uptown Charlotte. Julian Berger, WFAE News.
According to ESPN, the Charlotte Hornets are trading recently acquired guard Tyus Jones to the Dallas Mavericks for guard Malachi Branham. Earlier this week, the Hornets acquired North Carolina native Coby White from the Chicago Bulls. Veteran point guard Mike Conley was initially traded to the Hornets, but Conley has been waived, leaving him to sign with other teams. The Hornets' hot streak continued last night when they won their eighth game in a row, downing the Houston Rockets 109-99. With the win, the Hornets have moved into 10th place in the NBA's Eastern Conference standings, the last play-in spot for the postseason. Former Carolina Panthers linebacker Luke Kuechly is headed to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. The class of 2026 was revealed Thursday night during the NFL Honors Show in San Francisco. Kuechly was NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year and Defensive Player of the Year during his eight-year career with the Panthers. Kuechly becomes the second youngest inductee at 34 years old, behind Chicago Bears running back Gale Sayers. It's a big weekend for beer lovers in Charlotte. The Queen City Brewers Festival is on Saturday. This year, the festival's Beers for Life initiative is back. Each participating brewery was asked to feature a brew that will support a regional nonprofit. One of those breweries is Primal Brewery, and they selected us. Marshall Terry reports.
That's right. WFAE is proud to announce the release of a fruited pale ale called Ale Things Considered. And Primal didn't just make it for us, they made it with us.
So this is our brew house.
That's Primal's assistant brewer, Jamie Kane, who will be doing most of the work today.
Right behind me is going to be our mash tun, our kettle, and our whirlpool. This is where, in a brew day, we're spending 90% of the day.
The mash tun that Kane just mentioned is a giant tank where grain, mostly barley, has been soaked in hot water to extract sugars and starches. My first task is to scrape the spent grain out of the mash tun and into a big rubber trash can.
Definitely works your arms.
The spent grain is set aside for a local farmer who feeds it to cattle. The sugary liquid created by the grain soaking is called the wort. It's the base that will eventually become the finished beer. The wort gets moved next door to a kettle about the size of a small car.
Right now it's at 200. Degrees Fahrenheit. We want this to be up to 212 to start boiling.
And at that point, we throw in the hops.
Mm-hmm. And that's when the boil starts. So boil is going to be an hour long, and that's when you're going to be adding anything that gets added really in the brew is during that boil.
How much of all this is
more art than science, if you know what I mean.
Totally, totally. I was a chemist before I was a brewer. I love the science part of it. I would say it's more bacon over cooking, where you want to be a little bit more exact, you want to be more precise. Personally, I go home, you think I'm doing this all day, I'd be a good baker. I have never used a recipe when I'm cooking. I'm just throwing things together and it's never the same, you know, but you can't really do that with brewing.
After about an hour of waiting, the wort is finally boiling in the kettle and it's time for me to add the hops.
So when you pour it, keep your hand not above, right, and just kind of tilt it in.
All right, so we only have a handfuls of the hops here. Is it enough for this giant kettle?
Well, yeah, you know, think of it, it's a spice. So, you know, you put only like a pinch of salt on your potato, you know?
Right, so here we go.
Now the boil is officially started and it's going to be exactly 1 hour until it is done.
More waiting.
After being filtered, the wort gets sent to one of the fermenters lining both sides of the brew house. Fermenters are those big tanks with the cone shape on the bottom you're probably used to seeing at a brewery. It's here where yeast converts the sugars to make alcohol. It's also where the fruit flavors, orange, grapefruit, and pineapple, will be added to this particular beer. Then, after about 2 weeks, the beer will be transferred downstairs,
where we then carbonate it up and then package it before it's shipped out and people are drinking it.
Okay, those 2 weeks are now done, so there's only one thing left to do. Cheers. If you want to get your hands on Primal Brewery's new WFAE collaboration, Ale Things Considered, it will be available on tap at Primal's two tap houses in Huntersville and Belmont beginning Saturday. $1 from every pint sold supports WFAE. You can also find it at WFAE's upcoming chocolate event on February 19th.
It's time now for our monthly look ahead at what's happening in Charlotte arts and culture. It's our first Friday Arts segment. February can be a tricky month. It's short, it can be cold, and it comes right after the holiday rush. But there's still a lot happening on stages, screens, and across the city. This month, Jesse Boykin-Kimmel, a local arts and theater writer, Ruby Britt Height, director of community engagement here at WFAE, and Amanda Harry, reporter with Q City Metro, spoke with our Nick Della Canal.
Okay, Jesse, let's start with you and the local theater scene. One show that you flagged is Primary Trust, presented by Three Bone Theater. Tell us about this.
Yeah, this is the 2024 Pulitzer Prize winner for drama. It's written by New York playwright Ebony Booth. In Primary Trust, our main character loses his beloved job at a bookstore and is forced to consider options outside his comfort zone. This is Three Bone Theater's 14th season, and they're aiming to explore, they say, the tension between past and present, power and vulnerability, myth and truth. This is a sincere story about community and mental health and friendship, and you can expect power and vulnerability to take center stage in Primary Trust, but be on the lookout for myth and truth as well. That will open today, Friday the 6th, and will run through Sunday, February 22nd.
And you also wanted to give a quick nod to two shows this month at Theater Charlotte, I believe.
Theater Charlotte is in its 98th season. I'm sure we've mentioned that before. This weekend, it's wrapping up its run of Over the River and Through the Woods, which is a comedy about a young man about to move to Seattle for a new job from the East Coast. And it focuses on his grandparents' schemes to keep him close by instead. You can still catch the final weekend. But the very next week, Theater Charlotte is partnering with everyone's favorite local cinematic heroes, the Independent Picture House, to produce The Flick. This is another Pulitzer Prize winning comedy just 10 years ago about three underpaid movie theater ushers working at a rundown cinema. It debuted off-Broadway in 2013, and its hallmark was the playwright's knack for telling a significant story through seemingly insignificant dialogue between its co-worker characters. It's serious, it's supposed to be funny, and if you love the movies, it's a great show for you. That opens on February 12th, in time for both Galentine's and Valentine's Day, and it will run for just two weekends.
Interesting how all those shows seem to have themes of work, I guess, even leaving work.
It's true.
Okay. Well, speaking of Valentine's and Galentine's, Ruby, one event that you're highlighting is WFAE's Chocolate Charcuterie, Champagne, and Culture Tasting event. We've got to mention this. It is WFAE, and this is kind of a post-Valentine's tradition now. What can you tell us?
It is. It's become a signature event for WFAE, and it features over 10 chefs and chocolatiers and caterers and beverage brewing organizations from here in Charlotte, featuring a taste of sweet and savory. So you get a little bit of chocolate, you get a little bit of other kinds of cuisine that tie in with that, while you're also sampling great jazz. We have a harpist playing again this year, and everybody gets a passport. So you travel around to these different stations and have these wonderful experiences of sweet and savory. We'll have two time ticketed events, 5 to 7 and 8 to 10. And you just go to WFAE.org and get your tickets and get ready to have a great time.
Right. And just to be clear, too, this is a fundraiser for the radio station.
Yes.
And it is a really critical time for us. So I'm hoping to see lots of listeners there.
Absolutely.
You also have another WFAE event this month, I believe, too, right?
So next week, this is on February the 10th, WFAE presents Love is King Tour with Grammy Award winning artist Gregory Porter. And this is going to be at the Ovens Auditorium. Porter is an American singer, a songwriter, and a musician. He has a very unique sound that you are just drawn to. And we also have the luxury of having our WFAE program director, Eric Teal, who interviewed Porter about his music and his influences. And you can listen to that at WFAE.org. You can get your tickets at Ticketmaster, and it's going to be at Ovens Auditorium. It's going to be a great night and a pre-Valentine special event for many people. He's greatly influenced by Nat King Cole and Frank Sinatra and even Michael Jackson. So he brings a little bit of soul from different avenues. And the last thing that I want to mention is Levine Museum of the New South is also having a great night of music with Sign of the Times, ensemble that's here in Charlotte. That event is February 17th from 6:30 to 8 p.m. That's going to be at the Vapa Center. And this is in celebration of Black History Month. So there's Toni Toppins and her husband, Tyrone Jefferson, who are bringing that great traditional rhythm and soul and jazz to Charlotte.
Yeah, they always do a really great program every year for Black History Month.
They do.
Okay, well, speaking of Black History Month, Amanda, I believe you're tracking several related events this month in Charlotte. So let's start with this film series at the Independent Picture House that you're highlighting. What can you tell us?
Yes. So the Independent Picture House Black History Month film series, I believe this is their third annual one. So it has a really good lineup of, you know, Do the Right Thing, Master, Juice, Uptight, One Night in Miami. And what's cool about this series is that some of the movies will have a talkback discussion after the fact featuring local Charlotte artists and things like that. And I believe there's also one where there's even going to be like a performance response to the film. So yeah, it's like bringing a lot of community and discussion and film together at Independent Picture House, which is, I love going there. Great venue, yeah. Decor, great lobby. Yeah.
And great vibes this month, it sounds like.
Yes, great vibes this month.
You also wanted to highlight Afro Legacy Fest at the Gantt Center. So what is this about?
This is an event that is celebrating Black History Month, but also like through the lens of the diaspora, particularly like the Afro-Latinx view. So it's going to be bringing together like a lot of not just Black culture, but also Latin culture, things like, you know, rhythm and dance and things like that. I was thinking that, you know, that would be a really cool event, like if you are a part of the community, to go and be and celebrate with other Afro-Latinx people. And if you're not, you can go and you can learn more about different cultures and sort of like expand the lens through how you celebrate Black History Month.
And then finally, you've got a Black History Month family event at a local library. Tell us about this.
Yes. So families, you know, all the kiddies should be getting outside too, also celebrating and stuff like that. So yeah, I know that with the film lineup, a couple of them are kid friendly, but there's also some films that aren't super kid friendly. So I was thinking like something that can bring the family together. So the West Sugar Creek Library is going to be having a family celebration with photos and crafts and just like, you know, a way to bring people of all ages together.
Yeah, we cannot forget the kiddos. They are a big part of this city.
Yes.
Well, That is Jesse Boykin-Kimmel, Ruby Britt Hite, and Amanda Harry helping us look ahead at arts and culture in Charlotte this February. Thank you all, and I'll see you out there.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nick.
And for Friday, February 6th, that's Newsworthy. I'm Eric Teal.